And we're back with Steve Madigan from the US talking to us about the launch umbilical tower and his involvement in its deconstruction. And Steve, going from the deconstruction and placing all of the components, the parts into a storage area at Kennedy Space Center, in parallel with that, there was a group of you that developed a plan for possible reconstruction and display of the tower. Do you want to talk to us about that?
Yes. That actually became the focal point. It was a bit of a subterfuge, but the center had contracted us to disassemble the tower in a manner that it could be reassembled. So it just seemed like the natural thing to do would be to start thinking about how to take it apart in a way that we could put it back together in a cost-effective way. Mm-hmm. So once we got into that, we wanted to continue to develop that the theme in terms of attracting the tourists. In 1983, the Kennedy Space Center was the second largest tourist attraction in Florida, and as I recall, they got several million visitors a year to the center, but they didn't really have an attraction. In my mind, they have their visitor center with the rockets on the ground and all that, but we thought that the tower would be a magnificent tribute not only to the Apollo effort and to the men and the women that created it, but we also thought it would be a great attribute for the center as far as bringing the American people more deeply into what they've accomplished there.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I had the ear of all the right people as a result of the deconstruction process. And so they put me in contact with the DC people that, actually ran NASA. And so we did a presentation for them in early 1984 after our contract was completed. And we came up with really an outstanding plan since I've met you, Peter, I've gone on the internet and I've read about it, and everything I've read about is what we presented about we were going to have an elevator. They weren't going to let us charge.
Okay.
They said that the American public already owned the tower, and we had to have a charge to maintain it and to operate it. So we said, well, we'll reconnect the elevators, and for people that want to ride all the way to the top and see the center from 380 feet above sea level, maybe higher, it's a great view. We could put a little restaurant up there, and for those that want to pay, they can have the full experience. And then at the base of the tower, we were going to simulate the mobile launch pad with an earthen structure. And then in that, we were going to go back to the contractors that were integral in the whole Apollo effort. And we were going to look for subscriptions for them.
Sure.
Which is a nice way to save money. And then they would have a cubicle inside the box, so to speak, under the tower. Mm-hmm. And they would be able to tell their story on what the technology that they invented and how it got us to the moon and how it got us back and all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And we came up with docking in space things to attract the younger people. Anyway, all these things seem to have popped up 15 years later. Mm. NASA was not interested at all in 1984.
I think the situation must have changed significantly, because, as you know now, when you go down there, you pay for everything. It's completely outsourced. The whole visitor center is outsourced to Delaware and North, I think, the company.
That's just like the government, right?
Yeah, that's right.
They told me that was impossible, that the American taxpayer had already paid for this thing.
Yeah.
Which you know, is a side story. This is actually quite cute if we have a minute. When NASA came back to me originally and said, we have to deconstruct the tower and keep it, I looked at them in horror. Of course, it was my poker face. And I said, well, wait a minute. And they said, what? And I said, I own the tower. And they looked at me. And they said, what do you mean you own the tower? You've only been here for 3 months. I said, yeah, but I bought it. Look at my bid. I put right in there. This is salvage value. I said, oh, you want to take it away from me?
Oh, boy.
Oh, that was there was a lot of heartburn over that. They said you might charge us for a lemonade stand, but you will never charge us to buy back the tower. I said, just we understand each other, it's okay.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic. Very good. So the presentation, I guess, was received graciously, I suppose, but no real substantial response. Is that
yeah? I was graciously shown the door, and I understood. I got the message, so to speak.
Yeah.
Kind of like having a date with a beautiful woman, and she looks at you and says, "I can walk myself to the door."
I've had a few of those, actually.
So we just left it. But you know, 15 years later, they've done a lot of the things that we had suggested. They did some in Huntsville in Alabama,
yes,
with the ice camp, and I think they've done some of it in Houston as well.
That's right. Well, in Huntsville, I think we mentioned last week, they've got a 1-to-1 scale Saturn V rocket sitting on its tail in Huntsville.
Yeah.
It would have been so nice to have had that sitting beside a real tower, wouldn't it? But that's all history now. Yeah, for sure. So, Steve, that all sort of ended for you, I guess, in 1984, and you've had a career well past that. And
yep.
I believe you had some involvement in the September 11 Ground Zero site in New York. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, and you know, it's actually a very interesting segue, because I was privileged enough to do some very, very large projects in my career, and the short word for that is scale, and I understood scale. I understood large scales, like beginning at the Kennedy Space Center. I think that's probably was my baptism under fire. The scale of that project was absolutely enormous. And then I went on to do other very, very large projects around the United States. I retired in 1998, 1999, and I sold my brother the company. And he had gone on to pretty much stay in the same market that I had developed. And when 9/11 occurred, he understood that what we did, the technologies that we worked with, the recycling technologies, and the kinds of machines that we worked with, they did not have in New York City. And so It was, as you can imagine, it was an enormous upset. 9/11 was, and people were doing all kinds of patriotic things back then. It was wonderful to behold. So anyway, he wound up, his company that I sold him wound up being one of the first out-of-state companies that was brought into New York City, which is very difficult to do. New York City is a very, very difficult place to work if you're not from New York.
Okay.
And it's almost like a different country. You may as well think of it like that.
Oh, is that right? Is that sort of culturally, you mean, Steve?
It's culturally, and the unions are very, very powerful there. They have a union for everything.
Right.
And if you don't understand that culture, you won't survive in it.
Yeah.
So the company being brought in was really quite an acknowledgement. So I was living out of the country at that moment. He called me and he said, "You've got to come back and I have to show you what's going on here." So I was there about, I want to say, sometime around September 25th. And the buildings were still on fire. And the place was totally chaotic. But going back to my story of scale, the scale was so large that I was there for about 12 hours, and I never did get a chance to walk around the entire site to see if I could map in my mind the size of this thing. Mm. It was so much bigger than people think. The each tower was about 5 million square feet. So the two towers represented 10 million square feet of buildings, which is enormous. But they demolished as they fell. They demolished another 10 million square feet.
Yes, sure.
So it was 20 million square feet of buildings that had been demolished. You know, they caught on fire. They were hit with, you know, thousands of tons of shrapnel as the buildings fell. It looked like on television those buildings fell in a pancake fashion, but they really didn't. If they would have fallen in a pancake fashion, which is what happens when we use implosion, the building pretty much stays within its footprint. These buildings did not stay within their footprint. Oh, okay. They scattered over acres and acres. I understood it when I looked at it.
Mm.
So later on, when I heard about these people that were saying that this was all a contrived event, I doubted that they'd ever been to the site, because if you had gone to the site and seen the damage that the two towers created when they fell, it was not a pancaking event at all.
Yeah. So your brother's company, as it was then, was involved in that, in
yes.
removing parts and moving it off to
yeah be. They moved him on to the last building that fell was I think it was called building number 7.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the one that kind of tipped over like a loaf of bread. It fell after hours and hours and hours of being on fire. It actually was a 50-story building.
Wow.
And they put him on that along with another contractor, because that's what we were best suited for, that building, rather than the two towers.
Sure.
I think he worked there for about 3 months, and then things settled down. They got a good handle on how to complete the cleanup. The cleanup was, encumbered by the fact that they still had all these missing people.
Yes,
so they didn't want to just go in and ignore that. So they were very sensitive to that issue. And, in retrospect, I think they did a good job.
Well, I think you're right, Steve. I mean, the whole response, I thought, was a tribute to your country and the people there. Yep. Everyone just got in and did what they needed to do and, you know, never gave up hope.
The people, New York looked like a ghost town at that time. And to get inside the Ground Zero area, it was completely fenced off. There were military people everywhere.
Sure.
FBI people, the ATF people. Obviously the firemen, the local police. The place was inundated with all kinds of armed security.
Mm.
And it took a long time to get on the site. It took me about 2 hours to get my clearance to get into the site. And you were just separated by a cyclone fence. Surrounding the cyclone fence were hundreds and hundreds of New Yorkers.
Mm.
And they were, if there were priests, there were rabbis, there were, because there were things going on inside that fenced area that were very, very sad. And occasionally people would break down and they would just have to leave. And somebody would be there and they would counsel them. They would feed them. It was really an incredible event.
Mm-hmm. Very sad. But I think that they're getting close to completing the new construction on the site. So it'd be wonderful to see what that all looks like.
Yeah, let's hope so. It's only taken 10 years.
Yeah. Well, Steve, we've got to wrap it up. Let's finish on a positive note after that discussion. Hope's thoughts on the space program? Are you a space enthusiast yourself, Steve? Were you before you got involved with NASA?
I was an enthusiast to the extent that I read a lot of science fiction in the 60s and the 70s. So I was a very happy guy when I got there. I don't quite understand the current vision for NASA. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult. I love to follow the technology boom. I've been an amateur student of that for a long time. I think the nanomaterial will be a game changer in the whole thing.
Yes.
And I don't know if they're waiting for that technology to get a little better or what, but between where we're at and where I think we're going to be in the next 10 or 15 years, I don't see the vision. So I guess I'm a bit confused.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the nano?
The nano?
Yeah. The nano materials that they they're creating, very, very lightweight materials that are enormously strong. Recently they came up with a heat shield. I think they said it would handle 4,000 or 5,000 degrees.
Sure.
Something in an order of magnitude greater than they have.
Yes.
And these things are very, very light, so that'll change the whole technology.
Yes.
Of space travel.
Yeah, let's hope so. We're looking forward to hopefully some bigger, better things. Obviously, it's all driven by money, right? As all things are. Hopefully they can change the structure and get things moving. But it's something to watch. Yeah. Well, listen, Steve, really, really appreciate the time you've taken to spend the time with us, and I look forward to speaking with you more.
Okay, Peter.
Right now, the time's defeated us, so thank you, Steve, and have a good evening.
And the best to you and all your audience from sunny California.
Thank you. See you.
Thank you. Good night.